Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. In recent years, the notion of correct portfolio construction has been challenged, and diversification has become unpopular. Stocks and bonds have shown an increasing propensity to move together, calling into question the efficacy of the classic 60-40 portfolio. Moreover, sustained outperformance in select segments of global financial markets has caused portfolios to drift away from target allocations and left many investors with little motivation to allocate elsewhere. However, with the new year comes new forces driving markets, and the winners of the past may not be the winners of the future. To prepare portfolios for any unforeseen risks that may arise in 2025, diversification remains the best option, although the ways in which investors can diversify may look different than before. To share his thoughts on diversification in the year ahead, I'm excited to be joined by Jack Manley, Global Market Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. So let's get started. Jack, welcome to Insights Now.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
So to start with, I mean, we've seen such outperformance, particularly in U.S. large cap equities. A lot of people are saying, you know, why should I diversify? And, you know, isn't this, the whole idea of a 60-40 portfolio kind of dead here?
I don't think a 60-40 is dead, but I do have to acknowledge that there have definitely been some challenges with the traditional method of diversification. I mean, to your point, right, you look at these kind of investing pairs, so to speak, that have been lined up. Stocks have trounced bonds for 15 years. U.S. has trounced international for 15 years. Large cap's done better than small. Growth has done better than value. And that's made diversification an increasingly challenging conversation to have, an increasingly challenging subject to broach, particularly when people that are over-allocated or heavily allocated to one particular winner are leaving everybody else in their dust, right? It's very difficult. But when I think about diversification, I like to think of diversification as sort of a hedge against the unknown, right? This idea that what may have worked in the past may not necessarily work in the future. And one of the things that I always like to bring up when I'm talking to investors, to clients that kind of push back on this idea of diversification, they want to get rich quick, right? They want to be able to take advantage of that momentum that exists in certain markets, is to remind them that a lot can change year in, year out, that ultimately ends up changing the overall outlook, changing the overall view on how assets may perform. I mean, 5 years ago, no one's talking about a global pandemic, right? And now we live in a post-COVID world. 3 years ago, there is no war in Eastern Europe. You know, 2 years ago, there's no regional banking crisis. Remember that? Like, we don't spend a lot of time talking about that. But a year ago, it was the biggest thing. 2 years ago, no one had heard of it. 2 years ago, no one had heard of ChatGPT, large language models, right? This AI excitement is a relatively new thing. A little over a year ago, there's no war in the Middle East, right? I mean, stuff happens all the time. And it always has the potential to turn any sort of outlook on its head. And because you cannot predict that next big source of volatility, and I promise you there will be something coming down the pipeline in 2025, it is very, very difficult to predict the big winners and the losers. Next year, of course, but, you know, 10, 15 years from now as well. So the best thing to do in place of that is to diversify, right? To own a little bit of all these different things and put together an asset allocation portfolio. And admittedly, it's not cool to be an asset allocator. You are never going to be at the top of the dog pile as an asset allocator. You're never going to knock the cover off the ball. But if you are indeed a long-term investor, that asset allocation helps to smooth out that journey, make it more comfortable, make it more palatable. And I think in turn, results in investors making fewer, you know, emotional decisions when it comes to portfolio construction and therefore guaranteeing a better long-term outcome.
Yeah, I used to say that the goal was never to have the best return in the neighborhood. It was just to avoid having the worst return in the neighborhood and having to move out of the neighborhood.
And I think you don't want to get kicked out.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm buying, and I've always bought into the idea of you need to diversify because the world can change. Mm-hmm. But having said that, is there a correct asset allocation for everybody?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, there is no cookie-cutter solution to what a proper asset allocation is going to look like. And I think you have to address a myriad factors and answer a bunch of different questions to figure out what your ideal asset allocation may look like. I mean, obviously, there are things like risk tolerance and things like time horizon. And usually, these are going to be related, right? I am 33 years old. I'm going to work probably for at least another 30 years, more realistically, maybe another 40 years if things keep on going the way that they've been going, which means, knock on wood, right, I have 40 more years of stable income coming in. I can afford to take more risk in my portfolios because I'm not living off of what I'm investing right now. That comes way down the line. Meanwhile, if you're a pensioner, right, you're in your 70s, you're in your 80s, you are clipping that coupon off of this retirement account that you've built up over the course of the prior 50, 60 years. Maybe you are a little bit less risk tolerant, right, in that environment. You don't want 15, 20, 30% oscillations in portfolio value. You want something a little bit more stable. And of course, you don't want to paint in broad brushstrokes. There will be younger investors that are less risk tolerant. There will be older investors that, you know, want to go all in on stocks and get exciting and love that volatility. But for the most part, this concept of risk tolerance and of time horizon are pretty closely linked. And of course, they are also going to help to inform that asset allocation conversation. But even outside of that, you know, I think of asset allocation as sort of goals oriented, right? Like, what are you trying to solve for when you're putting a portfolio together? Are you looking for income or are you looking for capital appreciation? You know, do you care about stability in your returns? Or are you okay with volatility? Do you need liquidity in your portfolio? Or are you okay with having money locked up, right? These are the questions that you need to be asking yourselves when you're having conversations around portfolio constructions, because the answers to those questions will ultimately inform what an optimal asset allocation is actually going to look like.
And so, of course, we're looking forward into 2025, and lots could happen. And, you know, granted that, you know, starting from the point that your asset allocation is focused on being outcome-oriented, can you talk a little bit about the different asset classes and how they might be impacted by some of the issues that, as you say, are very likely coming down the tracks at us in 2025?
So I think, you know, when we frame it up in terms of outcome-oriented, right, are you looking for price appreciation, income, are you looking for diversification, are you looking for protection, whatever it may be. From a price appreciation story, equities will always be the name of the game, right? That's your portion of your portfolio that traditionally speaking has been the driver of long-term returns. And when it comes to the equity market opportunity in 2025, I think a lot of what we're seeing shaping up is the stuff that we already started to see shape up in 2024, just an extension of these trends that really started to emerge about halfway through this year. You know, we know at a very high level that prices follow earnings in the equity market. Ultimately, at least you hope, you're not buying a company that's not going to ultimately make you money. And the macro winds are shifting in a way that has made the profitability environment a little bit more benign, right? I mean, you're looking at wage growth moderating. You're looking at inflation slowly but surely easing. You're looking at rates, at least on the short end, moving lower as the Fed cuts. And while we don't know exactly where all of these things are going to settle, and they may not be cooling off as much as we would have thought 6 months ago, we do have a pretty good idea, at least directionally, of where they are heading. And in that environment, right, as I mentioned, it becomes a little bit easier to make money, right? If your input costs are going down, your borrowing costs are going down. And you've seen that reflected in earnings growth. In the second quarter of 2024, the S&P 493, as I like to call them, mm-hmm. So the S&P 500 minus the Mag 7, they made money for the first time in 2 years. The Mag 7 was the only game in town throughout the entirety of 2023 and a good chunk of 2024. But in the second quarter of this year, the S&P 493 made money. You look out into the end of next year, and analysts are actually calling for something pretty close to parity in earnings growth between the Mag 7 and the S&P 493. And what this means is that when you're thinking about the equity portion of your portfolio and you're looking for that price appreciation, the good news here, right, is that the pond that you're fishing in has just gotten a whole lot bigger, right? It's not just seven fish anymore. You got a whole, I don't know, maybe an ocean if you want to go crazy with this metaphor, right? You got a lot of fish that you are angling for. It doesn't really make things any easier. You're going to have your own whole set of new problems, right? Because we do have an economy that very clearly is slowing down. We do have interest rates that are moving lower but aren't going to be at zero anytime soon. We do have a whole lot of potential policy changes coming down the pipeline out of this new administration over the course of next year and beyond. There are still going to be winners and losers in this market. And so when I think about the equity component of asset allocation, to me, It's not about pitting style boxes against each other. This is not a growth versus value conversation. It's not even really a sector versus sector conversation. It's not banks versus tech. This is a security selection story, right? It is a bottom-up portfolio construction and active management approach to equities. I'm a little bit more biased towards the U.S. side of things. I think you know we've talked about this in the past. I'm a little bit more biased towards the large cap side of things, especially because those typically are a higher quality play, which is what you're looking for in this slowing growth environment. But I think there are some very interesting high-level macro tailwinds that are broadly supportive of that equity allocation as we move into 2025. The fixed income side of things is a little bit more nuanced, and that's where you really do have to ask yourself, like, what do you want out of the bonds in your portfolios, right? Because fixed income has, historically speaking, promised you two things, right? Promised you income. It's right there in the name, right? Fixed income is supposed to give you income. But fixed income is also supposed to give you protection. And for a very long time, neither of those things were readily available. And then more recently, with the Fed raising interest rates, the income was available once more, but the protection still wasn't very clearly there. You know, stocks and bonds moved in the same direction in 2022. They moved in the same direction last year. They're moving in the same direction this year. And so I think the conversation here has gotten a little bit more complicated. But I like to think of bonds not as broken, but instead as kind of misunderstood. You know, the framework that I use when I have conversations about fixed income with clients is like, bonds don't protect you against the stock market, at least not in the environment that we're in right now. But what bonds can do is protect you against the economy. You know, if I think our outlook looking out into 2025 is, again, for, you know, slow but stable economic growth, inflation kind of doing what it's supposed to do, interest rates continuing to gradually normalize, no recession, no shock, right? But when we were talking earlier about why you diversify, saying there aren't going to be any shocks in 2025 is like antithetical to the whole point, right? Of course there could be shocks in 2025. Of course there could be a recession. And if there is a recession, the first thing the Federal Reserve is going to do is cut rates. Mm-hmm. And they're going to cut a lot more than what they telegraphed at their most recent meeting. And when rates move down, the value of any existing bond that you own goes up and you make money in fixed mm-hmm. income. There's your protection. So if you are looking for protection in your portfolio, it is possible. You just got to be smart about how you're allocating. You probably want to extend duration a little bit. You probably want to tighten up on credit quality. If you're not too worried about the macro backdrop, though, you're not too worried about the protection side of fixed income, you're purely interested in that coupon that you're clipping, well, then your approach to bonds is going to change a little bit, right? Maybe you want to shorten up on duration because you're not really getting compensated from a coupon perspective, at least for taking on additional duration risk. So maybe you target something around 5 years or maybe a little bit south of that, short to intermediate duration fixed income. And maybe you extend your credit a little bit. Because if there is no recession and the high yield market actually looks relatively high quality, given what's happened with the private credit market over the last couple of years, functioning as almost like a sponge for a lot of the junky stuff that used to exist in there, you're getting a 200 basis point spread or around there. And you're talking about a 7% coupon that you're clipping with not a whole lot of risk. Right. So, again, figuring out where you want to be in bonds depends a lot on what you're trying to get out of your portfolio. But the good news, I'd say, for investors is there are options in kind of both camps, depending on what you're looking for.
And so there will be challenges when it comes to portfolio construction in the year ahead. How do you think about those challenges and how should investors protect themselves against these challenges?
So I'd say the one of the big challenges that we talked about earlier is the constant looming threat of the unknown, right? You just don't know what's going to happen next year. And the only way to account for that is to diversify. But I think if we zoom out a little bit, I think there are also, you know, some structural issues that we might be dealing with, particularly in public markets. You know, one of the side effects of this incredible run that we've seen in the equity market over the last couple of years is that valuations, at least in aggregate, are pretty darn stretched, right? I mean, you're looking at 22, 23 times forward earnings on the S&P. And while, you know, a 30-year average, 16 and a half times forward earnings benchmark may not be the best benchmark since a lot of things have changed over that last 30 years, I don't think anybody's going to argue that 23 times is fair value on the market, right? I think everybody's on the same page. This stuff is pretty expensive. Now, bonds are actually reasonably attractive right now from a valuation perspective, thanks to all that pain that we suffered through over the last couple of years with the Fed raising rates. But the Fed's now on the other side of that, right? And while, again, rates aren't coming down to zero, coupons are going to gradually move lower, especially on the shorter end of the curve. So when we think about the valuation of a 60-40 portfolio in aggregate, it's probably only going to get more expensive as we move through next year and into the year after that. And what we can see very clearly, right, is that there is a direct, almost linear relationship between starting valuations and implied future returns. Mm-hmm. And the richer the market is, the richer that portfolio value is, the weaker your projected returns are going to be. So right off the bat, we are positioned right now at a sort of disadvantaged position because of what's going on with valuations. You add on top of that the total lack of fiscal discipline that exists in Washington. Both sides of the aisle liking to spend money that we don't have. What that may do to long-term growth constraints, what that may do to longer-term interest rates, public markets in particular, I think are facing some very serious structural issues. And that doesn't mean that we can't have another good year out of the equity market next year, but it does mean that if you're a long-term investor, these are issues that you got to reckon with. And there are only a handful of ways that you can really avoid these problems outside, of course, of just diversifying, mm-hmm. right? And I think one of the, I don't want to call it a silver bullet, it makes it sound a little bit too optimistic, but one of the things that does seem to be working really well in portfolio construction today is the inclusion of alternatives into your mm-hmm. portfolios, right? So, you know, when you talked earlier about a 60-40 portfolio being dead, maybe it is dead. And maybe the new portfolio is a 50-30-20 portfolio, mm-hmm. right? Where it's 50% equities, 30% bonds, and 20% alternatives. Because alts, in one form or another, can solve for a lot of these issues, right? If you're looking for diversification, real estate's a great example of a negatively correlated asset. If you're looking for an income stream, transportation is a great example of a very strong yield. Private equity is a great example of a great return stream. Hedge funds are a perfect investment in an environment where it's a security selector's paradise, like we might be in right now. So I think that as investors kind of move through 2025 and beyond, they do need to pay more attention to how alternatives can fit in their portfolios. For a long time, that was difficult because there were gates that were put up around alts, yep. right? You had account minimums. You had to be an accredited investor. There were all sorts of complications, liquidity issues, like what we were talking about earlier. This industry is removing those gates. It's becoming easier to be an investor in alternative markets. We are democratizing that space, mm-hmm. so to speak. And I think this is going to be something that investors are going to have to take advantage of as they look to sort of deal with some of these structural issues that may be facing their portfolios over the next year, 5 years, 10 years, and beyond.
This sort of reminds me when I go to my favorite restaurant, I tend to just, there's like one or two things that I pick from the menu, and we're just going to have to force ourselves to look at all the things in the menu because it's really important. I mean, while I grasp the fact that 60-40 isn't dead, the return, you know, from here, particularly given equity valuations, isn't so great. And there are a lot of risks out there. And you really need, you know, the way you diversify against unknown risks, you know, you can hedge against a known risk, but you really got to diversify by getting a broader portfolio for 2025. Well, this is great advice, Jack. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
In our final episode of Season 12, I'll discuss how the lessons learned from 2024 can help inform better investment decisions in 2025. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.